Welcome to East Meets West, episode 131. I'm Tom Merritt.
And I'm Roger Chang.
Yes, you are.
131.
131, palindrome?
I have to repeat numbers every time you say them.
That is your job.
Yes.
That is your only job description on this show.
That is to repeat you.
Yes, we have it in your official paper of the Subbrilliant Corporation.
For every bag of peanuts you get per month, your job is to repeat time.
Right. Remind me to give you your bag of peanuts on the
way
out.
Remind me to give me my bag of peanuts.
Today's podcast is sponsored by...
We have sponsors.
No, we don't have a sponsor.
Oh,
we could have done a Dignation, though, and made up sponsors. Clever, funny sponsors.
Wait, if you said clever, then it would be Dignation.
You're wearing a Dignation shirt right now.
Yeah, I know.
Look at you, Mr. Company Man.
I'm such an apostate.
So, got a lot to talk about. A lot of stuff happening. Olympics wrapping up, of course.
Yes. I'm waiting for the big thing that's going to happen.
Did you ever watch any of the Olympics? You're not a big Olympics fan.
No, so. I'm waiting for, like, you know, either a terrorist attack or something to just blow up.
Some kind of... Well, we have the...
I know there's some...
We have the death at the very beginning.
Yes.
Of the volleyball coach. He was killed at the tower.
Yeah.
So that would that may be all you get.
Hmm.
That's sad. That's sad enough, don't you think?
No, I'm not saying it's not sad enough. I'm just thinking there's something about these Olympics feels like there's going to be something.
Georgia invaded Russia.
That's the big one.
Oh, wait. Did I get that backwards? what happened to the Olympic peace? Guess that went out with the ancient games. You know, back in ancient times in B.C.
How do you know?
They had the records show that countries agreed to an Olympic peace.
No, I know. I understand.
How do you know they honored it, you mean?
Exactly. How do you know the behavior?
Archaeologists have determined...
Basically,
a gap in the war layers of sediments.
There are less spears in, in this area.
Yes. They find every 4 years a gap in the spear layer
production.
Of Greece. I don't know.
You know what I mean? Like, even the current Olympic Charter, you know, states all the kind of... the noble, like, you know, peace...
Which I think are good, yeah.
No, I'm not saying they're bad, but it doesn't mean, you know... Oh, and then there was the thing about the that Swedish-Armenian wrestler. I was reading somewhere, like, I guess he was the one that won the bronze, but he threw it off in disgust or something, and they disqualified him.
Really?
Something
about, didn't hear
like,
about that. Did you hear about that, Eileen?
Huh. He essentially, like, he felt he was scored incorrectly.
So he was upset about winning. He thought he should have won better,
yes.
A silver or a gold.
And he was, and essentially his... beef was that he was scored after they were still meriting him after the actual match was over. So like it ended and then 5 seconds later they picked on a few things. It's like, well, it's not even part of the match anymore. Why are you scoring me that way?
Gotcha. Then there was the Taekwondo competitor from Cuba who kicked an official in the head.
Explain that to me. I only saw the photo in
the paper. Here's the thing. I saw a very brief report on the local news last night, and then a friend of mine at dinner today corrected me. Apparently,
dinner today?
Well, I'm using luncheon. There was a luncheon after the baptism this morning. Anyway, Korean barbecue is very good. So my friend Mike explained it to me. He took an injury timeout, which is only allowed to be 1 minute in Taekwondo, and he came back late, so they penalized him for taking too long. He got upset because he said the other person had waited too long to get out of the ring, and therefore his minute, he didn't get the full minute or whatever. I don't know. I didn't quite understand that, but he was disputing that fact. They argued for quite a while until I guess he lost his temper and he gave the official a Taekwondo kick to the head.
Yeah, no, I saw it. It was pretty brutal looking.
Yeah. Now, the other thing that is being reported is that he has been banned from the Olympics for life as well as any kind of international competition. My friend Mike disputed that. He's like, everybody's saying that, but he's like, I'm not sure that that's actually happened.
Like, so, that he's actually been banned from the Olympics or banned from international competition?
Or both.
That was pretty brutal.
I think he should be banned from international competition. You can't kick an official. You can yell and scream all you want. You don't get to kick the officials in the head. There is no excuse for that. That is not okay.
That's pretty brutal.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe they need to meld the American Gladiators sport with the Olympics.
I mean, that guy should look to our episode from 2 weeks ago, where we got very heated. We yelled. We said some things maybe we regret.
You said some things you probably regret. I regret nothing.
Really. I regret nothing. But neither one of us kicked each other in the head.
Because I'm physically unable to.
Because we can't lift our leg above our knees, for one thing. But even so, even if we could have, we would not have kicked each other in the head.
Maybe. If I was drunk.
Yeah, well, which you weren't. And neither was this guy. So he can't use that as an excuse.
Yeah, and he was a big guy, too. He wasn't like a little small framed guy. He was a pretty big, beefy guy.
Of course, the other Olympic controversy is just the idea of having the games in Beijing at all.
Yeah, you know. There,
a lot of people are very, very upset. A lot of people not watching the Olympics, not maybe not a lot of people, but I know of people who refuse to watch the Olympics this time because they are in China.
For me, that whole thing was kind of a lame reason to do it in the Beijing. Just say, like, okay, they won because they got the best facilities and all that. As soon as you, as soon as the IOC said this is going to force China to be more open, to be more respectful of human rights, come on, I mean, really, who are they kidding? It's just if you left that out, fine. And you know, I haven't been watching the Olympics for like for the past two summers and the winter in between. But it's like, you know, what did they think was going to happen? That suddenly, like, China was going to be like, you know, parading around with full, you know, democratic elections, and you know, I don't know. It just seems somewhat, you know,
disingenuous.
Yeah, insincere about the whole, like, oh yeah, suddenly there's going to be this huge makeover, like, you know, a magic wand touched them and the land that was once barren and infertile is suddenly, you know, filling up with trees and flowers and happy people.
He said, but I get your point, which is you shouldn't be promising things that you can't deliver on. I do think that having the Olympics in any country shines a light on that country and educates people about that country in ways that nothing else can, and in ways that that country can't control. So I think,
which is why I'm still expecting something.
And I think we learned a lot about Greece during Athens that Greece may or may not have wanted us to learn at certain times, but came away with a fairly positive, you know, a fairly positive view of a country that really is passionate and cares. I think with China, I think people are going to come away with an impression of China that's, you know, it's going to affect the way China is perceived in some ways negatively.
I don't, you know, honestly.
And in some ways positively where it should be positively. And instead, in other words, instead of it just being this, like, oh, it's the big communist China oppressors, you got to see some of the good parts of the country, which is a good thing. It doesn't excuse the bad things, but it actually gives people, I think it gives people more depth of understanding so that when China's government causes oppression, people realize, oh, it's not just this kind of paper country out there. There are a lot of good people. There is, in fact, people that could affect change if they're given a chance. It's not a lost cause. You feel a little more empathy. And I think it puts a spotlight on the Chinese government where things that they don't even consider bad get scrutinized because of this. Press censorship. They thought, I honestly think they thought they were being totally open with the press. And then when the foreign press came in and started complaining about how they couldn't get to this or that site, they were probably a little confused. Like, well, but you can get all the things you need. We're just blocking you off of other things. And there, you know, in other words, I think there is a good effect in the relationship of having the world come into your country and having the world see your country, no matter what. I totally agree. It's not going to be revolutionary. It's not like the Beijing Olympics are going to end and suddenly China is going to go, what a mistake. We should have never been communist. That's not going to happen. But I think it ends up with a net positive effect.
I don't know. My opinion, it's going to be And see, that's the thing. I think you hit on it. It's totally perception. For the Chinese government, and maybe to some greater extent the Chinese people, will basically look on it positively. Look, like, you know, how many years of decades of humiliation and oppression, you know, not only by the outside powers, but by history itself, we finally got to reclaim, you know, a position of nobility and position of, like, strength, right? We've managed to turn around and, you know, from decades before where we had massive poverty and, you know, famines every few years. Now we can put a huge, you know, opulent, ostentatious display. We can put up these new, amazing sports stadiums to accommodate all these events. The flip side, I think people who've always been critical of China will just say, aha, we told you so. Giving them the Olympics didn't really improve anyone's life. It was just a way for China to spin a, you know, what people should see as a negative thing into a positive event.
Well, and that's the thing, okay, because the argument I was just making is the unintended positive effects of just being exposed to the world and having the world exposed to you. But the counter argument, I think, is, but does this legitimize the current government in some way? Does it say this current government isn't as bad as all that? Look what they can do. Look what they can put on. I mean, that seems to be the more reasonable counter argument, is to say you should never have put it here because you're sanctioning this government, which is totalitarian and oppressive.
And in terms of opening up the country, I think that's already been done, as the world moved a lot of its factories, a lot of its production into China. It naturally would follow that, you know, people would say, okay, what's going on in this country? Why is it that they can afford to make, you know, these electronic items for like a penny on the dollar, where, while even say in Mexico or other nations, would be like 25 cents, or like in the U.S. it'd be 50 cents. What are they doing? You know, and so you had a lot of people doing a lot of snooping, a lot of peeking. So I think that was already there. I think there was.
Yeah, I'm not. Okay, and then the computer broke.
Yes, you broke your fancy computer.
So where were you, Roger?
I was explaining that I think the process of internationalization, or rather international attention into China, both its domestic and international policies, has already been kind of instigated by the fact that China has become the factory floor of the world. All the production moving there, it just, you can't help but draw, you know, eyeballs into it.
And I think the point that I had made before we realized we weren't recording anymore was that the Olympics are kind of like a factory in
yes.
that they are one of, and to summarize where I got, and it's too bad that we didn't get there naturally, but to summarize where I got, I think that I think what Roger and I agree on is that the Olympics are not this huge change that's going to change everything. The Olympics are one of the things that I think is going to have a positive effect in the long term, but pretty much just on the people of China. Nothing's really going to change that government. That government's not going to look at the Olympics and go, oh, communism was a big mistake. Totalitarianism is horrible. We change our minds. We're going to be a democracy now all of a sudden. That's not going to happen. It's going to happen when that government starts to change over. When there are opportunities for change in the future, then you'll see the effects of factories, the effects of the Olympics, the effects of tons of things. The Olympics are just one of those things. And then we got to the question of, does having the Olympics in Beijing legitimize the Chinese government?
And, you know, and my belief is it depends solely on perspective. For those against it, it's just evidence of the corruption throughout the IOC and, of course, in the international community that allowed such a thing. And for those who are for it, they say, well, look, you know, now Beijing, China has once again come into the spotlight on the world stage. It's an important event filled with prestige. And it is a wake-up call for the rest of the world that China is now, again, a world-dominating player.
And that led to me saying that I think my real reason for not having a problem with the Olympics being in Beijing is that the Olympics shouldn't be about legitimizing or not legitimizing a government, but what they are about is a global community. And I think that the Olympics should be more global. They have not been in South America. They have not been in Africa.
Yep.
And I think that having them in Beijing is a good step towards making them more global. They're not, it shouldn't be in Europe all the time. I'm a little disappointed they're going to be in London for a third time.
I really think South America needs one. I really think Africa, either whether it's one of the Gulf states or in South Africa. I mean, it's one of those things that I believe needs to happen if you want to kind of live up to the beliefs and the principles that, you know, the modern Olympics were founded on.
Now, Rio is up for the 2016 Games. So that's a possibility. Johannesburg probably could pull off a Games. I'm not sure there's too many other areas in Africa that could at this point, that have the infrastructure. Cairo's pretty creaky, you were saying.
Yeah, and, you know, the Gulf states, I mean, you know.
Yeah, Dubai. They should have it in
they're
Dubai.
They're building everything else, you know, literally overnight. I mean, it's a great location. It's central. I mean, you can, most countries fly to that part of the world.
Well, you know, has Dubai put a bid on? Maybe Dubai doesn't want the Olympics yet. Maybe that's too much foreign influence.
Well, you know, then you get into, you know, local customs. You know, for example, the swimming competitions, the swimming meets. The participants will have to wear relatively revealing attire.
Exactly. Well, they don't have to, but
that's
they will.
Yes.
And they won't want to not to. I mean, there was a runner. Can't remember what country she was representing now, but she wore head to toe covering.
Oh,
in the track and field, yeah.
Recently, right?
Yeah, yeah. In Beijing.
Not Morocco. Morocco, Algeria?
Maybe. I don't
but
recall.
But yeah, no, I noticed that. I was like, oh, that's really cool.
Yeah. So anyway, while the computer was down and we were trying to get Windows to install updates and recover and get recording again, we got in an argument over space.
Exploration.
Not space exploration, but the International Space Station, yeah. whether it was a waste or not. I felt like it's not a waste because there are experiments you can do in space that you cannot do on the ground, which, Roger, you agree with.
Yes.
But
I believe that you could probably get away with automating the process using computers or having it remotely done either from a ground-based central station and then remotely perform the experiments.
I think you overestimate the ability to remotely perform experiments. I mean, there are certain experiments, obviously Pathfinder is an example, that you can do remotely. But there are a lot of experiments that it would be much more difficult to perform with robotics than with the human eye and the human hand. That's not even the part we got arguing about.
No.
The part we got arguing about is I was making the point that things are just better in person.
I'm telling Tom, I do not disagree with that. However, within the confines and the limitations of space travel and space flight, I think all those experiments that people think that need to be done in space, I think you can do them remotely or with a heavy automation.
Then why do we... I won't go there.
Why do we have people at Star Trek,
Why do we have people in universities, you know? Why don't we just do all of
I'm not saying...
We could save a lot of money on grad students.
Oh, you're reaching for the red hair.
Yeah, no, that's why I didn't want to go there.
But
seriously, I do think there is value in having someone overseeing these things in person when you can have them, and you can have them here. Mars is almost out of the question, not just because of cost. It's also because of difficulty. It's not that we couldn't get someone there, but it is extraordinarily more difficult. We know we can put someone in an International Space Station. It's really just about cost. So at that point, if I'm a scientist and I'm like, if I can have someone there efficiently looking at things, keeping my eyes open, intuiting, I'd much prefer that over having to deal with the awkwardness of remote behavior.
I don't know. I mean, if you look at the way a lot of those experiments are set up, they're in their own little unit, and oftentimes it's not that the payload specialists are well versed in that particular science or whatever science. For example, if it's a biology or astronomy, they might not be like PhDs in either astronomy or biology. However, they're well versed enough to keep track and make sure that all the points of the experiment are followed along. I think you can do that with a computer, or you can do that with a remote operation. I think there's a romantic attachment with having people in space, which I don't think is a bad thing. I think that inspires the imagination. It fires up people to be willing to invest in space-oriented technologies. However, I think, you know, always trying to figure there being a person in the loop, I think makes it unnecessarily complex. I think if you did an experiment that was, for example, to see how weightlessness or extended weightlessness affected the human body,
which is one of the experiments that they run every
mission,
which
I believe is one of those few that you cannot do because you need a human, a person, a body there to test. But if you're doing something, for example, cellular mutation, mitosis, or you want to see if you can engineer a structure in microgravity, for example, for construction or fabric or something like that, if you can do that, you know, I believe you can do that remotely.
I do agree that we do tend to romanticize people in space, and I also agree that it's not necessarily a bad thing, although that shouldn't be the nuts and bolts reason always why we do it. I think we do need moon landings and things like that because they do inspire humanity. And I know you don't disagree with that. I also think that you are romanticizing the ability to do things remotely. I don't think remote computer controlled experiments are nearly as efficient and easy as you're making them out to be. It is difficult to control things remotely with computers and robots, much more so than being in person. Things would go much better, they go much smoother, and they go much faster when you have a person there.
I think that's true on land.
Good. Okay, let's move on to the
topic. I think when you're in a terrestrial laboratory where you have buildings and you have air conditioning.
So you think it's not true in space station?
Space adds a whole new dimension. I mean, you're not just dealing with...
Well, it adds a whole new dimension for computers and robotics, too.
Or does a computer have to worry about orientation? All it needs to know is relative to where it's looking at.
The computer has to know about orientation, yes.
It has to worry about, like, for example, you know, I'm basically referring to space sickness. You know, people get...
Okay, computers don't get space sick. Point taken.
People, too.
Uh-huh.
A lot of those experiments, I think, are already automated. When they're put up there, other than making sure that, you know, the numbers or the gauges stay in the area that they're supposed to, I mean, there's pretty much.
When a computer goes down, do you want someone on the scene to fix it, or do you want to try to fix it remotely with LogMeIn?
Or you could use multiple backups.
Yeah, I think you're romanticizing computers. I think you're forgetting the limitations we have where we say like, oh, computers can do this, computers can do that, robots can do this, robotics can do that. But in reality, it's much more difficult than we like to make it sound in our marketing materials.
I don't know. I mean, computers and robots do a pretty bang-up job building cars. And
this computer just freaking failed.
Explain to people what you were trying to do with what?
Well, what doesn't matter what I was trying to do with what. No, I'm not trying to cover it up. I mean, I've made it very clear that I run virtualization of Windows on a Mac to be able to use this USB. But it's a computer. And you know, they fail.
People
hard
are
drives
immune
fail.
To
robots burn humans out. Micrometeoroids will poke through.
Humans are so strong that little micro objects.
Yeah, but we'll be
drive
able,
like a bullet
we'll
faster.
We're
than,
creative. We are much more creative brains than a computer is.
I don't disagree with that.
And
but
when we're on the scene, we're better than when we're off the scene.
When you're in space, I think it changes the game entirely.
Does it make us less creative?
No, but I think
in fact there have been a few pretty rough calls on space stations where having people up there pretty much saved the space station. Otherwise, they would have just sent it in the atmosphere.
I think partially because the people were still in it, so they figured they tried.
Right,
and
they saved the space station and saved a lot of costs.
If you,
which they might not have either been able to do or have done.
If you made a smaller orbiting laboratory, you could reduce the cost, the initial cost, and make it more expendable because now you're not investing tens of billions of dollars, you're investing a couple of millions.
And I think that the end result of that would be a lower scientific output of lower value and the temptation to waste. That's what I think. What do you think of Biden?
I don't waste. You never waste.
The temptation to waste because if you have a lower cost item, you just said, you're more it makes it more expendable.
It makes it because you can have more of them up.
And if you have a higher cost item, then, you are more protective of it. You're not going to ditch it in the atmosphere.
I think that's a very spurious argument because
if you have
10 different experiments and 10 different modules orbiting the Earth and one fails, that means you still have 9 experiments going. If you have something,
if they are all operating at a tenth the scientific productivity, then it might balance out.
So you're assuming that it's
well,
the
you're
tenth.
Assuming that you could put 10 up there that would be equal to the International Space Station.
But there's a lot of assumption on both
sure
sides.
Are. You know what
there,
happens
Tom?
When you assume, Roger?
Yes, yeah, so
you mess up.
What?
Oh, there's something
What's
like that.
What's wrong with you, dude?
I don't know. We're running out of time. I wanted to get into a few comments. And
all
I
right,
also
Joseph,
wanted,
I
Joe Biden.
Nothing. Yeah, I thought that came out of the blue.
He was a plagiarist in the 88 campaign. I guess he got
I don't
over
know.
That.
I just read
He's
it.
He's in
that.
Bed with the MPAA, too. He's like a big copyright DMCA supporter.
It just surprised me because it seemed like literally it was like someone you kind of unbury.
I was jokingly telling my wife that it brought diversity to the ticket because there weren't enough old white guys on the ticket. So,
Tom, always playing the age card.
Always playing the age card, exactly. In my dotage. Let's move on then to some comments. Steve Reichenberg said it was nice to meet me at the New Media Expo. Nice to meet you too, Steve.
Yay. Hope you shook hands.
Insider Tester says, why does all of this remind me of that episode of The Simpsons where the Russian envoy to the UN presses a button and all of the Soviet Republic name plaques flip over to reveal Soviet Union and tanks appear out of carnival floats in Moscow?
And Lenin comes out of his tomb. That glass, that thing is creepy.
The Podcasticator says that U.S. troops are headed to Georgia for a humanitarian aid operation.
Yes, because they will be, quote-unquote, distributing the supplies.
Tech Priest makes a 5-point argument on why the New Media Expo should be held at the Moscone Center in San Francisco next time. We will forward that to the Borkin brothers, who run the New Media Expo.
Borkin brothers? Don't they do West Wing?
Yeah. George K. says, after the whole business with the Mongols and the Tartars several hundred years ago, those that remain settled in Crimea. There are also enclaves of Tatars all over the place, even as far as Gdansk. Some were assimilated, others weren't. They usually have Old Testament sound names such as Jakubovich, Avramovich. In the province of Halychana in western Ukraine, the names are more Armenian sounding, Kassian, Hassian, etc. Muscovy was the first Gorky. That's where the Kievan princes, the Rurik, kicked the undesirables out. When the Kazakh government and the Swedish forces under Karl XII fought Muscovy at Poltava and lost at that point, Muscovy appropriated Ukrainian history among the Western Slavs. The Russians call themselves Russians, but everyone else, Moskali, soft L, like Moskali. George, are you Ukrainian?
Because me? I'm not Ukrainian.
No, I asked, asked if George was Ukrainian because this sounds very similar to the way this history is explained by my ex-girlfriend's grandfather, who was Ukrainian and from Poltava.
So she was no longer Ukrainian?
Not that there's anything necessarily inaccurate about this, but it seems like a very Ukrainian perspective on that history. Russians tell the history much different, but then
you know,
history is written by the victors. Yes. Dark says, don't know why this podcast was in my blind spot for so long. Just listened to 122 to 130 and loved the show. Nice to hear intelligent random conversation. It really makes me miss living in a college town.
College town.
He basically says this is like, you know, staying up with his friends college.
Thanks.
Talking. Let's I see. I knew Roger would take that as an insult.
Let's pull out the bag of nachos and get the cheddar cheese.
Chris says he has figured out our pattern.
Pattern.
All right. We have a pattern.
We have a pattern?
Yeah. To make statement.
Yes.
Roger misunderstands statement.
Not always.
Roger picks other side of issue, mainly due to misunderstanding.
No.
Tom clarifies. Roger then understands original statement, but by this time is committed to previous stance and must defend. Tom gets frustrated as Roger's apparent misunderstanding, but at this point Roger does understand, but must act as if he understood all along and just didn't agree originally, though at this point probably does agree, but cannot at this time agree without looking like he lost the argument. Tom curses, or near to it. Roger finds a way to back down from previous misunderstood stance without losing face. Tom makes a funny.
I think that's a few more steps than actually what happened.
I think that happened with the Georgia-Russia debate. I don't know that that always happens,
that was,
but try to see if this applies to the NASA debate
yes,
we just had.
The space. Oh, I forgot to mention the cost associated with life support of keeping a person alive.
All right, let's wrap it up there. Sorry for any other questioners there, but we do read the questions, and we can't always get to all of them on the show. But you can leave your questions, and we like it even better, not when we read stuff on the show necessarily, but when you guys talk to each other and then spur new ideas for us to talk about. So go do that, subbrilliant.com/EMW.
Yes, and if you get a chance, visit Donald Chevalier's website.
Today's episode is sponsored by Donald Chevalier's website.
Yes.
What's the website?
It's DonaldChevalier.com.
And you spell it C-H-E...
Oh, no, not Donald. Ronald.
Well, there you go.
Ronald Chevalier. It's C-H-E-V-A-L-I-E-R.
Why would I go there?
Because it's a viral marketing site for a new movie. It's featuring... Produced by Jed Harris, the guy who did Napoleon Dynamite.
Ah.
It's actually really funny if you like bad sci-fi books.
So it's really... Roger is probably getting paid for this and not sharing any
Wait
of it
a minute.
With me.
I get paid?
I wish. All right. See you later, folks.
Bye.